Blog Talk Radio.
I am doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Just on quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yep. Not,
like
not
everyone
much.
Else, right?
Yep. Not much you can do.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is just do kind of a brief little introduction, and as long as you're ready, you just get rolling.
Okay. That sounds great.
All right. Joining us online. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
So is this clear enough for you? I'm going to go into my garage so it's a little bit
more
quiet.
Yeah. Okay. Sounds good.
How's this? I'm on speaker now.
Yeah, you're okay. Still sound good.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. Joining us on the line right now is a former Strikeforce middleweight champion, a multiple-time world champion kickboxer, and a combat sports legend and icon. He is, of course, Kung Lee. Kung Lee, welcome.
Thanks for having me on your show. Hope everyone's doing well.
Now, what have you been up to? Because, I mean, there's not much you can do, right, with this quarantine and this COVID-19. So what have you kind of been – what have you been up to?
Well, I've just been training from home and just, you know, hanging out with the family. I'm writing two different scripts right now. So I actually needed this break. So I didn't have to run around so much, and I can focus a little bit more on my family and myself and writing.
What are you writing scripts? Movie scripts?
Yeah, movie scripts.
Anything you can kind of elaborate on?
Basically, it's like end of the world stuff. You know, it's funny. I was writing it, and that, you know, I've been trying to I get as much as data as I could and information and try to put all the stories and tie it in all together. And then as soon as I start, I got through the first act and. Like everything that we talked about, except, you know, the pandemic, you know, like a virus, and it changes, you know, the way people live and, you know, how people react, you know, with the vaccine. So it's, you know, it's crazy how things happen.
Oh, very true to life, oddly enough, right?
Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, it's interesting.
Sorry. That's more like a film, and then the other one I'm writing for is for a Netflix series or something. But it's more like a balance of, you know, good and evil on Earth.
Yes, and it's interesting. Yeah. You're kind of doing that writing stuff. Are you planning on acting in it as well?
Yeah. You know, it's I'm Asian. I'm, you know, if in the world of Hollywood, unless you're white or skin or black or, you know. They're not going to really focus on, you know, like an Asian lead. So I should write it myself. And then, I have some Asian investors that I'm collaborating with, and we'll see what happens, you know?
Now, when I think of end of the world type stuff, good versus evil, I'm trying to think of you in Into the Badlands, because that kind of had a end of the world type feel to it, right? I mean, which you were great on, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, that was after the war, right? But This is more current day and how things are happening, and from the past to, you know, to the present, how everything ties in together. And, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about, you know, like in the Bible, there's a verse where it says the dead shall rise, you know? So I play off what's been really popular, like for the TV series, Supernatural had a 20-year run, right? So, you know, what could be done different in a movie like that or like a TV series like that? Because they've already covered every single thing that you can do. But actually, I came up with a really cool concept and, you know, got some guidance from some really high-level people that – understand the Bible and have done some crazy stuff like exorcisms and stuff like that. So I just took what they explained to me and kind of turned it into an idea. Then the idea turned into a script, and now I'm talking to a few different directors, and you know, it's all coming together pretty good.
Is the writing process easy for you, or is it difficult?
At first, it was difficult. I was better at just like reading it and understanding, like, because you know, I've had about over a dozen parts, and you know, I really, really trained for the part like I would train for a fight. You know, I'll really break things down, know my character, know the scenes and how it's laid out, so I can know what the director would want, and then when, if he's open, you know, the director would say, "What would you do? You know, give me that tape," and you know, then I would do it. But other than that, when I study and I train for it and I go over, it's just like repetition, right? Then just like you're hitting a bag or you're hitting a combo, you're doing the same thing, you're shooting in, you're escaping. I just take all that application and I do it on every little details of what I need to do for the character and develop the character. And so I'm just kind of doing the same thing when I'm writing. And then just the part that, I pick up is, you know, like, how to put the script together, like interior, exterior, you know, fade to black, you know, flash cut to this, or you know, kind of like montage or stuff like that. That's what it came together. You know, I got some really good friends that write very well. They're script writers, so I just bounce ideas off them, and you know, I get a lot of good feedback, and you know, I go from there.
Quite a different journey for you. I mean, legendary fighter, now writer, producer, creator. Like, that's definitely a different role for you, right?
Yeah, you know, can't fight forever. You know, I wish I can, you know, still fight. I definitely miss it. I still spar. My son, my middle son Anthony, he's a beast. You know, he's only 15. He made the varsity team as, you know, as a freshman, and went to a really tough tournament at the Sierra Nevada, got top 12, and, you know, he wasn't even really training because he, you know, came off being sick, and then the week before the, you know, Christmas break, he had, like, finals, so, like, I didn't let him go to, like, practice. I made sure that he had to finish all his homework before he can get through practice, and he wasn't able to get his homework done, so, you know, I just did a little work with him in the garage and, you know, have him hit some pads. And he went out there and, you know, got to the quarterfinals and lost to the returning state placer and then the number one ranked guy in the tournament. He knocked off the number 8. And, like, he like, dominated the guy 15, like, by 15 points. And then the match right before he was going to get a medal, like, he got to the second day and he was so sore because he hasn't been training. Like he never takes like any pain meds or, you know, and for the first time ever, he's like, "I need some pain meds." You know, he was so sore, but he got out there, did great and barely lost by, you know, just a bad decision that he made. And, you know, and then after that, he got to a little accident, a barbecue accident. And then, his season was over, but now he's, you know, he started training again and get back into it and went to a off-season tournament and, you know, got to the second day. So I'm pretty proud of him. He's going to be like a force to reckon with. A lot of people like think he's like slamming everyone. He's really good in wrestling, but his stand-up game is better than what he is in wrestling. So as soon as he puts it together, then I'm going to get him into some jiu-jitsu and put that style together. Look down into a submission or, you know, whatever that he likes the best.
Any pressure on him from you? Because that's kind of some big shoes to fill. You know what I mean? Are you kind of making sure he holds up the legacy or no?
No, I got to let him, you know, go on his own journey, you know. And I think as a coach, I want him, you know, to be the best that he can be. But as a father, I don't want to ruin that relationship and be that, like, you know, can't, you know, find that fine line between being a father and, you know, and a coach. So I just, when I'm coaching, I just push him to his limit, and if he has any more, he'll push past that limit. So that has come from him. So I explained that with him. You know, of course, he has a dream of, you know, going where, being a world champion. I said, hey, I want you to be better than me. I want you to, you know, accomplish more than what I've accomplished. So as a father, I want that for you, but you got to meet me halfway. So whenever he doesn't, like push or stay motivated, I just remind him instead of like chewing him out. You know, I just remind him, hey, what's your goal? What do you need to do? Because right now you're not doing it. So I'm going to go train. If you want to come along, come along. If not, don't waste my time. You know, so things like that is kind of like how I would push him. So by me saying, don't waste my time, that sparks something in him, and he comes and he brings it, you know, so.
Very, very good. Is it easier now because of the quarantine and kind of staying home? Is it easier kind of to stay fit and stay in shape, or is it almost harder because you're almost home too much? You know what I mean? Like that kind of effect where it's like you're getting stir crazy.
Well, I truly needed this break here. You know, I was like nonstop. I just a year ago, I moved from Grove back to my hometown, San Jose. And it's been nonstop, you know. I went through a really ugly divorce. And, I have full custody of my two older boys. But one son's already, like, out of, you know, high school. He's already, like, 2 years out of high school, and he's doing great for himself, you know. And then my son Anthony, he's a freshman in high school. So I actually took the last year and a half off just to focus on him. Because, you know, the transition with, you know, going through the divorce and stuff, I wanted to make sure his head's right and, family first and raise him the right way. And then with the divorce, I have another son with my ex and, you know, just trying to keep it as, you know, as civil as possible and just keep living, you know, life to the fullest, because every day is a blessing, and tomorrow's not promised to you.
Absolutely. Now, as far as you and your like your personal life and like life before fighting, how did you actually kind of get into the fighting world? How did that kind of come to be?
First I was when I was young. I was at 2 years old. Almost 3 years old, my family fled Vietnam a week before the fall of Saigon, and my grandfather was a former chief of police, which would be like a colonel's rank in the military, but he still advised and spoke four languages, so, you know, he is very valuable. So the U.S. government says, you know, you have 2 hours to decide. One suitcase each, and we are going to, you know, leave. And you have 2 hours to get back here, and, you know, we'll get you to safety. So he and left, or he would have been executed or had to change sides. So he left, and we ended up in a refugee camp in the Philippines, then a refugee camp in Guam, then a refugee camp here in Monterey, which is about an hour away from San Jose. And from there, you know, he worked hard and got us into our home in San Jose. We were that family that lived like, you know, like 14 people in a 4-bedroom house, you know? So, just from there, because I think a lot of the American kids and even the minorities was not educated, kind of like what's going on right now. Like everyone thinks it's like the Chinese virus and a lot of, things are happening, a lot of racism. And so back then, a lot of people didn't understand, you know, maybe their uncle or their dad didn't come home from war, or their POW, or, you know, they, you know, died in war. So there was a lot of hate. There was a lot of, confuse, you know, kids because, you know, I remember all the Vietnamese kids were always getting bullied. I was one of them. I was always getting bullied. And finally my mom just says, hey, it's time for you to learn to defend yourself, you know, and put me in martial arts. And I think that was, you know, the turning point when I started doing martial arts and I enjoyed it. But then, you know, she wasn't that consistent with dropping me off, and because she was working three jobs at the time. And so I found wrestling in the seventh grade, and, you know, the rest is history. Thank God for wrestling. I got a chance to compete on a, you know, one-on-one sport and had some really great coaches that really cared about, you know, not just me as a wrestler, but me as a, you know, as a kid at the time, and then as a teen. And then, you know, I I think the journey was definitely guided, and God was there.
Like, so many people don't realize that you were a good wrestler because they think of you as like a stand-up guy, right? I mean, that's kind of like your thing. It's like the stand-up game, the karate, the kickboxing. A lot of people forget you were high school All-American and a really good junior college wrestler as well.
Yeah, that was actually a plus for me. So a lot of them, they just thought I was a good stand-up guy. But, you know, I came from the wrestling pedigree, you know, high school All-American, like you said, and then a junior college All-American. But I wrestled year-round. I went to every single tournament. I was that kid that used to walk around the neighborhood, hey, would you like to sponsor me? I'm getting ready for the AAU Nationals or the USA Nationals. And I would, like, call my mom's friends and get, like, $1 here, $5 there, and then have enough for an airfare and fly out and stay with the coach's son and compete and wrestle like sambo, Greco-Roman, and freestyle, wrestle all three styles. And by the time, you know, the week was done at the Nationals, I've had 11 or 12 matches under my belt and came home sore with, you know, a couple medals. So it was fun. So I want my son to experience that too, but, you know, it's got to be up to him. I can't force him to do it. I'll just, you know, just have them want to do it.
As far as getting into the stand-up and getting into the, you know, the taekwondo, the karate, and the sanshu, and the boxing, kickboxing, how do you make that transition from the wrestling world into the stand-up?
Well, I think with a little background when I was younger, I went back to the same teacher, and I started doing some local tournaments. I was winning all the local tournaments. I did point fighting. I did taekwondo sparring. And then I did continuous sparring. Then I did full contact sparring. Whatever, everything that I entered in, I was winning. Then when I got to, like, the higher level, the Nationals, I started seeing a lot of, like, politics where I would totally dominate the guy, but somehow I wasn't getting my points and I was losing. So I said, oh, you know, maybe it's a transition to full contact. So my first full contact tournament was in Alabama, and the U.S. national coach, Sean Liu, he was like a lower level Shaolin monk, and then he would throw the tournaments, and I just inquired about the rules. He said you can wrestle, you can punch, you can kick. I was like, wow, okay, I'm gonna be there. So I went over there, I signed up, and then I won my division really easy. And he's all, hey, do you wanna, you know, do a special fight in the evening time? And I said, sure. He's all, you can fight the light heavyweight. I'm like, holy crap, that's a big jump in weight. He's all, well, if you want to do it, you know, let me know. And I said, well, I got nothing to lose. And so I went out there and did it, and I won the match, but I broke my hand and my foot in that match.
Oh.
So, yeah. From there, that was the first time I ever did full contact, but it was, everything was like, great, you know, because I was a really good kicker. My hands were okay at the time, but I was souffleing everyone. My wrestling was really good. So, you know, and I was watching Best of the Best at the time. I was like, oh, I like that scissor kick. I'm going to copy it. You know, so I kind of did it my own way, and I got two scissor kicks in that tournament, and then I scissor kicked the guy in the finals at the next weight up, and I hit him in the stomach in the third round, and you know, it was over. Like I KO'd him. And then, you know, I was like, this is great. Thank goodness that the fight's over, because, you know, my hand was swollen. I can already feel it. And the top of my foot, because I kicked him on the top of his head. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was. From there, that was what hooked me into the full contact and that style. And then, you know, I represented the U.S. Three different times in three different world games. I'm the only one who's brought home medals from every world games. And then I became the coach. First, I was the assistant coach. Then I was the head coach. And then I was the only coach to have three of my own fighters make the team. Actually, I had like five of my own fighters make the team, but three of them got into the medaling rounds, and one of them took gold. And I was the first coach to have a fighter win gold world championships.
Awesome. And was that kind of a natural thing for you, just as far as like winning world championships, like you said, and winning those medals and dominating the world games? Is that natural to you as far as just fighting and just having the instincts for it?
Yeah. You know, I think when there's more rules, it was a little bit harder for me because you can't draw blood when you're point fighting, or when you're doing Taekwondo, you can't really punch to the face. And I got disqualified a lot because I was trying to aim for the neck where the chest pad wasn't covering the neck part, and I would actually hit the chin by accident a few times. And I, you know, on the bigger matches, it was really like close matches, but then I kept getting disqualified for, they call it drawing blood. So I just said, I need to do something like full contact. So when I, you know, transitioned over to full contact, I didn't have to hold back. And I was just like, you know, it was, everything came naturally because I trained so hard. And plus, I've had so many wrestling matches, and like the timing, the reaction, and plus doing martial arts at a young age, I was already, you know, used to the kicks, and, you know, and my boxing was really bad at the time. It was okay. You know, it was better than, you know, a lot of fighters out there, but for me, when I look back, I was like, man, I stuck in boxing back then. But then, you know, over the years, I grow and get better at my weakness. But I feel that when I got into the full contact, with everything that I've done, from point fighting to Taekwondo to, you know, continuous sparring, then when I was able to, like, open up instead of hold back, it was just natural. Like, I was just knocking out everyone.
I love it, and I love that you just referenced a little while ago, Best of the Best. It's probably Eric Roberts' best movie. I love that movie.
Yeah. That was a great movie.
I love the ending as well. Very kind of surprising that, hopefully this isn't a spoiler for anybody for 30 years ago, but the good guys don't necessarily win. So that was quite a surprise in the end. Very cool, though.
Yeah. It was a good twist, you know, but it had all the emotion and human struggles in the first one, right? The second one, they kind of took it off the grid a little bit, but I think the first one was inspired me a lot to, you know, just open up and, you know, try different things, and, you know, the transition from punch kick to throw to scissor kick to just everything that I did. And actually, Scott Coker, about a month ago, last time I went to go have a breakfast with him, he brought up something that, you know, made me feel really good, because, you know, hey, come, I'm not sure if you really, I think you're a very dynamic champion, because style, or every single, you know, type of fighting, from point fighting to Taekwondo fighting to continuous, you have always, you know, carried yourself as a true martial artist, but you won in every single style. You became champion in every single style. And who else have done that in the history of you know, martial arts? I can't think of, you know, all the names, but, you know, like, I was like, what about, you know, like Chuck Norris or Superfoot Wallace and stuff like that? And he's like, no, like the most current. He's look what you have done. And he just like came and listed all off. And I was like, man, that's awesome. Thank you. He's like, when I do decide to do a Hall of Fame, you'll be the first one. I'm like, oh, cool. That'd be awesome. So,
wow. Quite an honor coming from him, too, because he's been around the world doing, you know, obviously a legendary promoter for sure.
Yeah. He recently told me that, you know, they get the, you know, I guess the Frank Shamrock fight, and then him and Mario, they're just going to talk about it, because he still today, he said that that's the loudest crowd that he's ever been at, because, you know, at one point, you know, when the UFC bought out Strikeforce, he worked for the UFC for, I believe, 2 years or a year, and he said that he's never been at an event that was so loud it was deafening. Because actually, when he brought that up, I was like, yeah, I remember that, because when I came back after the first round, Javier Mendez was like, what the hell are you doing? I told you not to throw any spin kicks. I was like, I cannot hear you out there. And then, you know, you hear me now? I'm like, yeah, but it's going to be the second round. I got to try to, you know, catch him with it. He's like, no, you just got to, like, point fight with him. And, of course, I, you know, didn't listen. I just tried to kick his arm off, and, you know, it worked. So, you know, he wanted me to play safe and be careful. And then in the third round, you know, I, if I would have just listened to him a little bit better, maybe I wouldn't have got staggered in the third round, you know?
Right. But you do end up breaking his arm and getting the win and winning the Strikeforce middleweight title. So you obviously were doing something right, right?
Yeah. But it's just, I feel like a lot of people would say, like, I just saw this little documentary just done, like, what crime, you know? Like, I try not to look back, because what has happened already happened. So if I look back, it's like, now I'm looking back. And when you look back, you can't look forward, you know? You always want to stay looking forward, and that's what I always tell my son, because he has a lot of debate with his friends about that too. I'm like, son, don't worry about what happened in the past. Actually, just use the past to make sure you don't make the mistakes that I've made or you've made before in the past, but just keep going forward. Just keep going forward.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned kind of your prime and stuff like that. Is there any reason why you didn't kind of get into MMA sooner? Like, you know, we were kind of just intimating a little bit, like, obviously maybe more in your prime if you were in MMA longer or went to MMA first. Is there any kind of reason of why you maybe didn't try MMA until 2006?
I think when the UFC came out, it was like one weight division, right? And I think because when I did go up to light heavyweight and fought in that tournament, I broke my hand and my foot. And, you know, when I did get caught, you know, I didn't get hit much, you know, when I was competing. But when, you know, every single fight you get, you know, touched up a little bit. But when that light heavyweight hit me, I definitely saw some stars. And I was like, damn, you know, I saw the difference in the power. And, I actually trained with a guy who was on undercard. I can't remember his name. It was so long ago. I've trained with so many people, but he was a heavyweight. And then, I did very well against him, and he couldn't take me down because I was a high level wrestler. But I don't know. I just like felt like I wasn't finished at what I was doing yet. So I wanted to try to really, compete and, somehow get to, fight against the King of Sanda. And finally in 1999, I actually fought, the King of Sanda from China, and he was their youngest champ, and he was undefeated for 3 years. And he was just going through everyone, knocking everyone out. So after I beat him, I got a chance to go back to the world championships and, coach. And then I just waited and I was making a living at the time, trying to support, my family. And, I had my first son. So I was like, what they offered at the time, like, couldn't even really pay my trainers. And so my schools were doing very well. So it's like every time I go on like a 2 week, vacation with my family or go away and do a seminar and I come back, I feel like my school takes a hit because it's not the same when if it's not you, because I used to teach all my classes, right? And so I just never got a chance to do it because I felt like I couldn't afford to, I didn't want to be selfish and go and fight. And then what about my family fighting for, actually back in the day after I fought Jason Ying, it was 1997. It was on pay-per-view. And it was for a world title. He was a bronze medalist at the world championships. And then I haven't fought at the world championships yet, but I was, up and coming you know, like a amateur that was just, you know, tearing everyone up in the scene. And when I fought him, you know, I dominated him, and you know, they actually paid me for the fight, and I got paid like $5,000. And then when I came back and when it aired on TV, UFC called me up, but I had my receptionist pick up and kind of negotiate for me, but they only offered $1,500 at the time, and at that time I was like, I can't do much at $1,500. I got a kid, you know, so I couldn't really do anything. So
interesting, because you know, obviously years and years later UFC would kind of blow up and really become the monster it was, but you're undefeated basically in kickboxing as you kind of go through. I mean, 17-0, kind of dominating guys, beating guys in Strikeforce under the Strikeforce banner, obviously more the kickboxing banner before they did MMA. Shoni Carter, Brian Ebersole, I mean, some pretty good, some names that people should definitely recognize. Were you surprised at all that you're kind of, not dominating, but, you know, you're kind of going through and you are in K-1 obviously as well, but you're kind of like the guy to beat.
You know, just looking back, I was very blessed, you know, but, you know, again, there's a lot of great fighters. There's a fighter that I really wanted to fight in Iran, that was from Iran, because at the World Championships in the semifinals, I was dominating him, and then he did a spinning back kick, and I stepped out and I did a leg kick, but I hit him in the groin, which I did hit him in the groin, and he played it off so well that they disqualified me, so I was eliminated from going to the finals. But I already had beat the toughest guy from Belarus in the tournament. You know, that guy from Belarus was like, you know, the government pays him to train and he fights professionally. So I already had beat him. And it was like, you know, it wasn't like where he, you know, got anything, you know, like good on me. You know, I got punched in the face a few times, but I dominated him, picked him up, slammed him, scissor kicked him, swept him off his feet, caught his kicks. And then, you know, it was a tough fight because, you know, like he did hit hard. And then the first round was like almost even, but you know, I hit him with the spinning back kick, and then I started seeing that hurt him a lot, and that was where all his energy was drained from taking that back kick. So I just start pouring on the pressure, and then he broke towards the third, you know, like like in the third round, because the first round they gave him the round on points, which was, you know, a politics, because I was scoring and I was, you know, I was beating him, and in the second round, I just completely dominated him, and then in the third round, he stopped. So I got to the semis, and, you know, I was just completely dominating him in the first round, and in the second round, it was like towards the end, he just threw, like, he was backing up, and I was chasing him down. He tried to do a spinning back kick, and I kicked him, swept him, and then when he landed, he held his groin, and then I got disqualified from going into the finals. And in the finals, you know, the guy from Russia wasn't as tough as the guy from Belarus. And so I was pushing for that fight against that guy from Iran, but every time we tried to make that fight happen, I guess it was either visa problems or something. So, you know, they ended up just getting like the Shitokan champion, or, you know, like, you know, Shoni Carter, or, you know, someone for me to fight that, you know, had a name and that was really tough, and you know was somebody at during that time. So, but I was hoping for like international guys, but then the promoters all come, how's that the international guy? No one knows him here, so, you know, you got to kind of like work with us a little bit. We'll get you the best guy that we can get, you know, for you to fight. I said, I want that guy from Iran, you know, but, you know, it worked out great. I'm truly blessed, and I feel grateful for my career, what I've done in the martial arts, and, you know, grazing all the covers of Black Belt, Inside Kung Fu, and Kung Fu Magazine. So, you know, I when I look back, you know, there's really no regret. You know, of course, everyone says, hey, just imagine if you would have started MMA sooner. I didn't, so I'm not going to look back and say, oh, I should have started. If my life happened that way, so it's like not my plan, right? I feel like I always put it in God's hands, so it's God's plan. So that's kind of like how to look at it, you know?
Absolutely. And as far as like kickboxing and karate and fighting and stuff, IKF, ISKA, world champion, just multiple times, just like kind of just dominating. So how do you get into MMA? Scott Coker basically has his eye on you, say, hey, man, I'm doing Strikeforce Kickboxing, now I'm doing Strikeforce MMA. I want you to start doing MMA.
Actually, it was Scott Coker and Javier Mendez, right? So Javier Mendez is like, hey, come, you know, you've done everything you could do in the Sanda, your style of fighting. It's time to, you know, let's get into MMA. Scott's going to promote. And Scott's like, yeah, you know, because they brought me to my favorite restaurant, like the Pho place, right down Montague and Capitol, right? And we used to always go there and eat. And they're there was no good cop, bad cop. It's just they're both good cops. And like, come on, it's, you know, look at your talents. Don't waste your talent, you know. You're not going to get any younger. Go out there and just fight one fight, see how you feel. You know, we'll get you a tough opponent that we can build, you know, for the fight. So I thought about it. I said, all right, I'll give it a try. And I said, Javier, you got to train me. And Javier said, okay, yeah, well, that was the plan in the first place. Who else would train you? I said, no one. So it's you. And, you know, at the time back there, it was like Dave Camarillo was with the camp, and then, you know, Bob Cook, you know, and all those guys, just like, okay, it's time. So I remember, I was really never exposed to like the jiu-jitsu, and I came in and Bob Cook's like, okay, these are the moves, let's go to basics. So just passing guards and stuff like that. So he's all, okay, let's do some wrestling with submission. So I was picking up Bob Cook and I was slamming him. Next thing I know, I was like in a triangle choke with his leg. And I'm like, and I got out of it because I picked him up and I was like the rampage slam, but I didn't slam him.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time I picked him up and I slammed him and I found myself in an arm triangle, I was like, this is weird, you know? And I was like, okay, what are you going to do here? Stall? And the next thing I know, I woke up and I'm like, hey, where are we at? So I was I understand submission now. I get it because I had no clue at the time. And when I woke up, I was like, dang, you can submit from there? I didn't know. So then I just started getting in class. And, you know, within a few months, I started understanding more. Because, you know, I did it a little bit with Caesar Gracie and then Hal Gracie. But I was traveling, and then it was like once a week, and then it was with Gi, and then we were just doing so much basic. And then when we grapple, like with arm bars or lapel chokes, you know, like I would just tap because I didn't want to risk any joints. But like here's like no Gi wrestling with Bob Cook, and I was like picking up and slamming him down. And next thing I know, every time I take him down, I'm fighting a triangle or like an arm bar or something. I was like, dang, this is good stuff. I need to learn this stuff. So
great transition, easy transition though, as far as going from, you know, some amateur wrestling, but really the stand-up game into a full immersion of MMA. You think it was an easy transition for you?
Well, you know, I think because of the coaches, you know, they really helped me understand the game. And I think with my martial arts IQ and having that mindset of, you know, I know everything. I didn't have that mindset. I had the mindset of I'm always the student of the game. So I went in and I always wanted to learn, and it was easy to absorb because they were good teachers. So I just learned and executed and stayed humble and competed.
And you were definitely one of the most exciting fighters for sure. And Strikeforce definitely kind of used you as a definitely great promotional tool, and your charisma, everything else. Obviously, Scott Coker knew you very well from the kickboxing and the karate world, so he's very familiar with your charisma and stuff. So as you're kind of going along, you beat Altman, Warren, Von Flew, Tony Franklin. You beat Tammy Morgan. And then, like you mentioned before, facing Frank Shamrock for the middleweight championship, and you beat him in front of the loudest crowd he said you've heard. And Scott Coker agreed, I guess. Was that just one of your like proud achievements and great moments? Because Frank is known as being one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time.
Yeah, I mean, definitely hands down. You know, I've sparred with Frank before, and he is one of the toughest competitor and even sparring partners I ever had. I remember he was just like at AK, he was running through everyone. And then Javier, we at the time, you know, Javier and I was just talking. We were talking about like gyms and stuff like that. But he's like, hey, I need some work for Frank. And he was training Frank back then. And I'm okay, yeah, I, you know, I'm getting ready for, you know, one of my Sancho fights, you know, and sure, I'll give Frank some rounds, you know. What are the rules? He's, I don't know, you just punch, kick, throw, and then once you take him down, he'll, you know, stay on top a little bit, then he'll let you go and we'll stand up again. I said, sure. And then so I remember I just got done, like, doing a workout video back in the day where it was like, you know, the taekwondo paddles. It was like a kick paddle video that I did for Tiger Claw. I was like, oh, okay. So I literally finished the kick paddle video, and then within an hour, Frank was there. I remember I was laying down, and then he came in, and then, you know, I was like, okay, that dude's pretty big, you know. So he was in there. He was just pumped up, and then we got inside my boxing ring, and we started sparring. I was like, this dude's like, he was like one speed. He was just like beast mode coming at me. And I remember after like the sixth round, we had to stop because he like bull rushed me, and I defended like that takedown. But when we hit the ropes, he knocked all of my turnbuckles. The fucking ropes came off the turnbuckles, and it like my whole ring just collapsed. I was like,
wow.
And you know, after the sixth round, I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm tired. I thought he was only gonna fight five rounds. Why are we doing more rounds? You know, and you know, he was just like, that's Frank. He wants to. He'll do more than what the rounds that he'll fight. Okay, well, he got six. He got one more. I'm good. I'm tired. You know, because I was used to doing 5 minute rounds. You know, I was like used to doing like three, and we come 4 minutes. I was like, oh man, when are we gonna stop? But it was a great experience to spar fight. And after that, they asked me to come in a few more times, and then closer to the fight. And then so he tapered off from hard sparring. So you know, I wasn't needed anymore. And then, you know, from there, we ended up meeting, and, you know, he called me out after my Sam Morgan fight. I was in the best shape against Sam Morgan because I just got a big Universal movie with Channing Tatum. So I flew out there, and then the shoot went a little bit longer, so I didn't get back in time to start, or I had a full training camp. So I came back, and that was the first time I ever went to the third, like a third round, where right at the end I thought, man, I'm not gonna be able to knock out this guy, because I was knocking out everyone. That, you know, Tony, I knocked him on the early in the third, but it was towards it, close to the end of the third, I caught Sammy with the liver kick, and then I knocked him out. I'm like, wow, I gotta make sure I come into shape in these fights, because I was pretty winded. Javier was like, no more movies for you. So I'm like, yeah, I agree.
That's what happens, right? You start getting popular, you start showing the charisma, then the movie world and the acting world wants you, and that kind of hurts your training, right?
Yeah, it definitely hurt my training. You know, when I came back after I beat Frank, I was also 18 months just doing three movies back-to-back. You know, Scott said, hey, I need a main event for the December show. I'm like, Scott, I haven't done anything for 18 months. All I've been doing is lifting some weights and, you know, doing some cardio. And for my part in Pandorum, they didn't want me to lift any weight. They wanted me to look thin and lean for my part. So I literally all I did was cardio, and I didn't eat as much. And, you know, I just got down to 185 and maintained that weight the whole time. So it was for 2 months. And then he's, I really need a main event. I'll say, give me 2 weeks, I'll let you know. And then after 2 weeks, I was still sore. And he's like, come, we got to go, let's go. And I'll say, okay, let's do it. And then, of course, you know, he's like, come, I'll give you an extra $50K. I'm like, I'm in. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Money talks. That's great. So was that kind of the career highlight for the combat fighting world, beating Frank for the middleweight championship of Strikeforce?
Yeah, beat Frank, and then, getting my revenge for my first loss against Scott Smith, fighting as a co-main event under Fedor. You know, I was like, wow, back then I was a Fedor fan, and then I was like, fighting, under, the great Fedor. So I was honored by that, so I fought that, I got my revenge, and then I went back to doing the film world, and then UFC signed me.
Yeah. First, though, I got to ask, though, how come you vacated the middleweight title?
Well, during that time, I was basically three movies back-to-back-to-back. And there's no way I could defend the title. So I was gone for 18 months. So, you know, knowing that I have to choose between doing a huge, big-budget movie with Ben Foster, Dennis Quaid. Then right after that, I got a Bodyguard and Assassin, and that's Donnie Yen, right? That Donnie Yen was, like, massive, the biggest, you know, biggest Chinese action star back then. So I was like, shit, I'm not going to fight and defend my title. Here's, look at this opportunity. And, and back then, like, these Chinese movies, they're offering me a lot of money. So I was like, I can't fight forever, so I got to kind of build something so I would have something after my fight career, right? I wasn't done fighting yet, but I wanted to start, like that train moving for me, for my career in that world of entertainment, because I already know how hard it is in Hollywood, and unless you're like a massive star, even like a massive star, they're not going to put you in as a lead, right? So here's, I get a chance to play a lead villain. I'm top four billing in the Dennis Quaid and Ben Foster movie, and then with Donnie Yen, I was one of the main villains. And then before that, with Bill Kong, who brought over Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, he was nominated for an Oscar. So three movies back-to-back, just amazing opportunity for me. So I just, it wasn't fair for me to hang on and make everyone wait in there, So I just, Scott just says, Kong, you got to kind of defend your title or you got to vacate it. I said, well, I'm going to vacate and then I'll come back. And he said, oh, okay. So he wanted me to fight, of course, but I decided to vacate.
Was that kind of just an easy decision? Because, like you said, you can't really fight forever. Injuries and stuff happen and different things. Is that just a kind of easy decision to make? Like, you know what, this might be the smart financial great move for my future.
Yeah, it wasn't easy, right? It was
right.
But at the same time, I just had to sit down my family and figure out what was best, and I knew that, of course I started MMA, late. I was 35 going on 36. So I said, here's the greatest opportunity to prolong another career that could financially do very well for me and my family. So I took that risk because, in the fight game, all it takes is one fight or one training camp, and when you injure yourself, you're out for a long period. But back then I was very fortunate. It was right before my last Sancho fight. I was actually helping this Brazilian fighter Fuji, who was getting ready to. I was going to coach him in China, where it was the North American and South American team versus China. So I was helping him get ready for his fight, and then I ripped my hamstring, doing deadlifts and going heavy, and then sparring, and then I didn't listen to my body, so I ripped it, and I realized, man, that put me out for a good 6 months. So I realized an injury in training or even in a fight could put me out that long, then what, So I just made the decision, hey, I'm going to do these three movies. They're renowned producers and in a big company in Constantine Films. They, at the same time, they had that, they had a movie with Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler, Citizen. So, I was like, I'm going to jump on this train right here. So I did it.
And right before you retire, like you said, Strikeforce gets sold to UFC. You end up in UFC with Dana White, and they don't give you a lot of easy fights. You know what I mean? Wanderlei Silva, one of the biggest MMA legends of all time. You take a tough loss to him, but then you beat Patrick Cote. Then you vicious, great knockout of Rich Franklin, which was awesome. And then Michael Bisping, the loss kind of to end the career. They didn't make it easy on you, right? I mean, they put you in there with some top talent.
Yeah, you know, the reason why I went to UFC is I went to fight the best.
Right.
And, you know, actually my first fight was supposed to be against Vitor. And then I started training for Vitor. I brought in some training partners for Southpaw. And then, you know, Vitor said he got injured and he didn't want to, you know, he wasn't going to be ready. So they brought Vanderlei over. So, you know, during that time I was training at AK and then, you know, and King Mo was there, right? So, you know, King Mo was one of my sparring partners. And, man, he, you know, at the time he was like this beast of a wrestler and fighting. He was undefeated at 205, and then he slammed me pretty good and cracked my rib. And then, you know, it's like, you know, you call Dana White up and say, hey, I'm a little bit injured. And you go, oh, make sure you're ready for you're the cold main event in San Jose. We need you. So I said, screw it, let's do it. So I went into it, you know, I was feeling good. And then, you know, I come second round, I'm like, whoa, you know, I should have pushed a little bit more cardio, but, you know, you couldn't do much. Running and doing, you know, aerodyne alone won't do it, you know. And then, I started feeling it, and I got caught, and the match was over. So I really, you know, got my cardio down and, you know, fought Patrick Coutte, but then, you know, injured my foot. They're like, we need you for China, and really you don't really have a choice. You know, you either do it or you get sat in the, you know, sit, you know, they bench you or they put you on the undercard or something, you know. So I just said, let's just go and do it, you know. And so I went out and did it. So that was great, you know, gave me the win. And then, you know, then against Michael, you know, Bisping, I was actually supposed to fight him in Manchester. And then they wanted me to go and do the tough show in China.
Right.
And I really didn't want to do that. And then even at the time, you know, like 2 days before I had to leave, my wife at the time had a stomach issue where she had to get a huge operation. They, you know, they all they said was like, look, read your contract. You better make sure you're out here for the beginning of the show when it starts. So I stayed for the surgery. She was okay. I left the day after, and then when I got out there, they didn't even start for a week. So it was like, you know, the crazy shit that happens, right? And then you know, then you do all this. Then you save the show in China because the Li Long TV has never done a reality show. So even Dana White, there's a interview where I think he's on ESPN or Sherdog. He's like, man, if it wasn't for Kung, he saved our show, you know, in China. So I literally, because like I would like pick up the camera and say, how do you work this? Like, you know, I told the translator, hell, I'll film this because they're missing all kinds of great stuff. And so I actually even had some of the fighters reenact some of the stuff because we miss some like amazing stuff. And there's some stuff that they couldn't even put in there because it was so like censored in China, you know? And so after that, you know, then I thought it was okay. I need to get back fighting. You know, this pay is like nothing compared to what I get paid, you know, fight. I got to pay bills, you know? And then they're like, oh, you got to go on a tour for the TV show. So it's like, one after another. Then finally after I come back and, you know, I'm just winding down, oh, you know, here's a little gift for you. You know, it's not even what, like, worth as much as what like the coaches get. And I was like the Dana White in China. And then they're like, guess what? You're gonna fight Michael Bisping in China. I'm like, okay, cool. So, yeah, I finally got a fight. And then, you know, it was, you know, the rest is history.
Then the kind of basically retirement and stuff. Any issues, though, with UFC? Because, you know, they had that false statement about stuff like, any issues with them, really, or no?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, here's the deal, right? After what happened in China, they went 2 weeks before I was going to go to Asia because I was going to go there and train in Vietnam. And get acclimated to the time. Their lawyer, Michael Mersch, I think it was Michael Mersch. And then they called me. They said, "Hey, we need you to sign a new contract." You know, and I'm like, "Well, when do you need it by?" Because my lawyer's, you know, he's out of town. He's on vacation. Said, "We need you to sign it today." I said, "You just sent it today." And then they said, "Well, just make sure you sign it. I said, well, I'm not going to sign anything unless my lawyer looks at it. And then they said, well, then, good luck. And then, you know, I felt like, okay, I wonder what's that about. Because, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm about to main event for them in Macau, you know. And, you know, at that point, the event was already sold out, you know. And then, so I went over there and, you know, it's just like after I lost, what happened was they kind of threw me under the bus and said that, you know, I had elevated HGH levels. Well, thank goodness for Dr. Caitlin, who was the Olympic Committee PED specialist, and he says that, you know, Kung isn't, his HGH levels were actually normal, because you tested him right after he competed. So, he didn't do it because he knew me or he wanted to do me a favor. He was actually upset with the UFC because that messes with his 10-year research of HGH. So he was a specialist in HGH, and if you exercise for 30 minutes and you take your HGH levels, then you would have the same levels as like I did. It was elevated. If you sit in the sauna for 30 minutes, your HGH levels gets elevated, right? So they, of course, UFC had to lift my suspension, which first it was 9 months. Then, you know, I guess either Dana White or Lorenzo says, oh, you know, outrageous. He was, you know, using performance-enhancing drugs and they gave me a year. But then they had to take that back and I would say that, you know, they're lifting my suspension, and right away they offered me another fight. But I was, at that time, I was so bitter from what happened, because, you know, like what I did for the UFC, you know, like a lot of people don't realize it, but their first offer was with a Chinese investor for $4 billion. And, you know, like I went out there and I did crazy promotion. I left my wife at the time to go and do this show when she was like in the hospital. She had a piece of her intestine taken out. And then, if you're not for the company, you're against the company or something. But, you know, after all that was done, I just decided, you know, I can't trust them. And I believe a big part of that, I believe in my heart, is Scott Coker had left UFC because, you know, of course, he finished his contract. And then he moved on. He got a job at Bellator. So of course they're gonna try to lock me in for another six fight, 18 months. That was the same deal that I got, six fights, 18 months, but I was stuck on their contract for 5 years. You know, so, and a lot of times, you know, after one of my fights I got injured. Yeah, you know, I was injured, but then right after that I was, you know, ready to compete right after. You know, Rich Franklin, I went to compete again right away, even though I had a little, like, a scope in my elbow. I took out some bone spur, but I was ready to compete. But then, you know, they wanted me to do the show, you know, and you really don't have a choice, you know. So, and after that, they offer, you know, a couple fights. And then by that time, after what happened already, it's like I got such a bad taste in my mouth, and here's another opportunity for them to do some other shady stuff, because if I was going to do something, I was going to, why would I take HGH? You know, it's not performance enhancing, you know? So I just, finally I got my diet down. I did what I could, you know, with the show. And then when it was time for me to fight, I said, okay, I'm going to get shape. I was in great shape, you know. So Michael beat me, but, you know, I got pretty messed up. Got my eye messed up and, you know, couldn't see during the fight. And I kept fighting all the way through. So, you know, it's what happened is I figure I don't want other fighters to have to go through this. And at the time, Rampage hit me up, and he got off of it. But then he introduced me to Rob, and they talked about, you know, what UFC doing, they're cornering the market. And I knew that firsthand because they bought out Strikeforce, they bought out Pride, they bought out WEC. And I said, you know what, I don't, because my son what if my son comes through the ranks? I don't want him to have to go through this stuff. There's a lot of other fighters that, you know, that are silenced by them. But, you know, for me, I'm not gonna, you know, be quiet. I'm gonna stand up. I'm gonna stand up for all the other fighters. This lawsuit that we're doing, we're representing 1,200 fighters, and all the fighters that come after this, we're standing for them. So as they monopolize and lock down the market, sure, a lot of fighters might have their own opinion, but a lot of fighters know. Like, I was getting, like, secret, like, high fives when I was going to, like, the Bellator events. They're like, oh, thank you, Kung, you know, but they wouldn't dare say that out loud or in public or anything. But, you know, there are some fighters that, you know, don't understand, and they're just happy that they're part of the UFC, but they don't realize that UFC is taking majority of, they're taking the lion's share, you know, and like, unless you're like a Conor or somebody, you're not making, you know, the type of money that even like middle level boxers make, you know. Even some of the champions get paid, like, look at, you know, like Mighty Mouse, he's like one of the greatest, you know, at that weight, and look what they're paying him. You know, they should be at least paying him, you know, seven digits. But they don't, and they make that money.
It is crazy. They could be making billions, and these fighters are getting paid like $10,000 or, you know, whatever the amount is. But it's definitely not equal compensation as far as their fight level or their experience or their status. I mean, they could probably make more off sponsors if they were allowed to. You know, they kind of got the Reebok things from, so they could probably make more off sponsors, but they don't even allow that.
Yep. That's what I'm saying. They take everything. They even, you know, got greedy. They got greedy on you know, the sponsorship. Look at how much people have lost out on sponsorship. You know, it's crazy. Where Bellator, on the other hand, you can have any sponsor you want on your shorts. You know, and the difference between the promoters is Scott Coker is a true martial artist. He started in Taekwondo. He was you know, came from the Ernie Reyes, you know, Taekwondo, you know, demo team. And then, you know, so it's all about respect and discipline. And then you can see it. Look at the last fight. The last fight was supposed to happen. Didn't happen. He paid all the fighters. He paid their show and went in person, you know, paid all the staff. So that's like, you know, my hat's off to Scott. That's awesome. That's integrity. Yeah.
Yep. He is a great guy. He is great. Now, as we head towards the finish, head towards the wind down in MMA, 9-3 career record. Obviously, kickboxing 17-0 undefeated. Even more amateur wins. Even more world championships. Like we mentioned, Strikeforce middleweight champion. As far as kind of going from that and being a legendary fighter into the acting world. Did you think that was like just a natural, easy progression for you, just as far as being able to get, like you mentioned, being able to get some of these roles that you've been able to get in? I think a lot of people remember Tekken, obviously, or, you know, maybe they'll remember Into the Badlands. But do you think it's been easy for you?
No, you know, every journey in, whether it's the fight world, from the like the kickboxing to the Sancho to the MMA, it's been a difficult journey. But in this journey, it's not as difficult. It's just the longer hours and who gets behind you, right? Because Hollywood is Hollywood. You know, if you dig deep into Hollywood, there's a lot of, you know, not too great stuff, a lot of dark stuff in the business as well. So but you have more opportunity if you're going to do something yourself. And there's more platforms now. It's like you're not stuck with, you know, like the major networks, right? Or you're not stuck with Warner Brothers or someone. You can go around and shop, and everyone's competing against each other. They want the best project. Now there's Netflix, there's Amazon. There's these, 10-minute movies that are coming out. There's so many avenues where you could bring a project in. But going from a transition from fighting, you're used to being in front of the camera. But now it's a different game when you have to act and deliver a character. You've got to have that timing with the other actor. You've got to have that synergy with the other actor, and you just got to know where the camera's at. You got to kind of like dominate the room, just like you dominate the cage. So there's it's a lot different than if you're just fighting. You don't have to hold back. You can just crush the guy and slam him, and you just go, pedal to the metal. In acting, you have to make sure where your rhythm's at, or where you're gauging the mood, or your personality, or you're happy, or you're sad, or you're angry, and you don't want too much of it, or you don't want not enough of it. So it's a little bit more where you have to be dialed in really with that character. You can't just, like overact. So it's definitely a different type of entertainment, a different type of experience. If you put in the time, you're going to get what you put into it. So I put in the time, and it seems like every single part that I've done, I've been pretty happy with, except Tekken, because I was getting ready to fight Frank Shamrock, and then I was gonna pull out of it because they kept running, they kept pushing my part, they pushed me, and finally I said I can't do it, so they rushed me in, they shot me out in a week, and then I actually got 21 stitches because the lead actor hit me on the like halfway through the fight scene, so we had to continue to work around a different fight scene that we already had staged, and I came home 4 weeks before the Frank Shamrock fight with 21 stitches, it was crazy.
Wow, interesting. In the movie game, getting stitches, interesting.
Yeah, well, if you're going to do your own stunts, make your own fight scene look good. Obviously, that was probably one of my not as exciting fights in my movie career, because of everything got cut short because I got injured on set, But when you're the star of the movie, you just got to be safe. You got to rehearse it so well that everything is dialed in. And, I've been able to do it without much rehearsal because the movies I've been on didn't have that type of budget, like with Dragon Eyes or, a puncture wound, even security, even with Antonio Banderas, I came in 3 weeks before they start filming, and the fight scenes weren't all developed by the fight coordinator, so you have to wait till they develop it. But with Dragon Eyes, I developed all the fight scenes myself. I brought in my guys with puncture wounds. I helped out with it, but I had full control. And when you have full control and when you're creative and you've really done your homework, you can definitely take it to another level. So that's what I've been doing. I want to do a film that makes people think and where people can enjoy the action and get behind the character, and that character will make you feel what is happening, and you can feel the character and enjoy that journey with him. Or, it's like a roller coaster. You got your ups and you got your downs, and you got it. When your character touches the audience in that way, that's when you have the winner. And of course, you got to have that storyline instead of making a movie where you go in and no one knows why you're fighting, why you're kicking ass, why you're shooting people. There's got to be, the story's got to be through the gut battle and why you're doing it, why your character is in the situation he is in.
That is very, very true. Very important. Those narratives and those storylines and those character development, very, very important. I think people sometimes tend to forget that in some of the movies and some of the TV shows.
Yeah, it's very important. Very important.
Now, as far as you and your career, you can kind of lump acting into it because you've done so much acting and film roles and stuff. You can kind of lump that into it as well. But what do you think is the legacy of Kung Lee? I mean, legendary fighter, obviously, multiple time world champion, but what is your kind of lasting legacy? What's your stamp?
You know what? with my legacy, I should leave it in God's hands. I feel like it's not done yet. But right now, I'm part of this lawsuit. I'm fighting for 1,200 fighters and all the fighters that come after, right? So I'm doing that. I'm helping out with some, just a lot of like racism going on right now with, you know, the Asian people, because they believe that every single Asian is Chinese and even the Chinese, you know, the people, they're not responsible for the coronavirus, you know, whatever, you know, or whoever, or Mother Nature, whatever it is, you know, that's the reason, but it's not the people here who are innocent and who are just trying to make a living and, you know, provide for their family. And to look at all the hate crimes, look at what's going on in today. And it's kind of crazy, you know, to be part of this pandemic where everyone's on lockdown and everyone's quarantined. You know, I'm very religious, and I just started getting back in, touching bases and with my spiritual side, and, you know, just reading the Bible and stuff like that. It's just like, man, it's just like, where are we going to go? How much more can Mother Earth take? You know, how much more, you know, more of the darkness could this world take? You know, so.
Very true.
It's hard. I just put it in God's hands, and instead of like wanting to do something, like, oh, I plan to do this, I just say it's God's plan. You know, so whatever happens, whatever signs, whatever, you know, I'm put here on earth to do, I'm going to do. So legacy is not done. I think it's just starting. So let's see what happens here. You know, my girlfriend's Apache, and look at, you know, their land being taken over, and, you know, where she come from, there's a lot of corruption. And, you know, I'm standing up for all the mothers out there. You know, they're dealing with CPS that's, you know, taking kids without, they're taking kids, you know, unwrongfully without, you know, they're breaking laws, or, you know, judges and some of the deputy cops are, you know, it's just a racketeering out there. So I'm just behind the movement. So,
as far as plugs and social media and things like that, can you please just share with everybody, give us your plugs?
My Instagram is KungLee185. And same with Facebook's just KungLee. And Twitter, same thing. And, you know, that's it. That's my, you know, social media. If you want to follow my journey or see what's going on, and, you know, I got a lot of going on, and, you know, hopefully you can take from it that is something that you can find useful or handy, you know, in your life. I started a YouTube channel where it's just Kung Lee Official, and I talk about basic self-defense techniques with what you can do to protect yourself in this world, like pepper spray, or if you're doing cardio kickboxing, you know the basics of punching, and you can put a knife or two knives in your hand, and now it's a game changer for you. If someone's attacking you and they don't have a weapon and you have two blades, all you're doing is throwing some combos at them with blades, you know? So I'm doing that just for all the people out there that's, you know, part of, you know, the hate crimes out there. So that's what I'm doing right now while I'm on quarantine.
Another cool thing you're doing too is training via Skype. If you go to KungLeeOfficial.com/train, limited time during the quarantine. Very, very cool. You're kind of doing a Skype, basically some live training. So that's awesome too.
Yeah. I give a lot of tips for people who, you know, need some motivation, or people who want to get their, you know, they're like a quick workout on. Because, you know, like if you think about it, right, that's what I've been telling everyone. The most and main push-ups that you can do in, say, 5 minutes, and as many push-ups and squats or even sit-ups that you can do in 5 minutes, if you did that every hour because you're home, you're not doing anything else, anything else. Just say you got 50 push-ups in 5 minutes. By the time 8 hours come around, add up all the push-ups you've done, you know? So just simple things like that, you know, like don't need to do an hour because then people who don't want to work out, they won't even listen. You know, they won't even, well, I can't do an hour workout. Well, do 5 minutes. Start with 5 minutes. It'll go to 10. It'll go to 15. Next thing you know, you're doing 30-minute workouts. You know? So,
great stuff.
The best time is now. Nothing else to do.
Yep. Exactly. During the quarantine, might as well. So, Kung Lee, just wanted to thank you so much. It was an honor to get you on. One of the greatest mixed martial artists / combat sports fighters in history. Just a kickboxing legend, karate legend, whatever you want to say, stand-up legend for sure. So, Kung Lee, thank you so much, and good luck in the acting world.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the interview, and thanks to all the audience that's going to be tuning in. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Lee. Appreciate all the time. And you have a good one, and continued success in your acting career.
Thank you. You have a great day.
Yep. You too.